Welcome, my friends, to Scry Me a River, the Gaming Advice Podcast. I'm Riley. And Dennis has not shown up for work today. No, he's over in Las Vegas having the time of his life. Too busy to join me on a call to record Scry Me a River. Must be nice. Dennis, over on the other side of the world, living it up large in Las Vegas, the city of sin. No, obviously he's over there for MTG Vegas, the CFB event that's taking place this weekend. So I hope he has a great time. But I tell you what, we're going to have a great time over here as well on this week's episode of Smart, because it's going to be an AMA episode, just like last time, episode 18. I couldn't believe it was that far. That was that long ago, 90 episodes ago. But I mean, it just goes to show. I've been at 100%. Every Smart episode, you know you're going to get Ryan Knight. Don't even worry about it. Dennis, well, you know, a track record now. It wasn't a once-off thing. He shows up when he feels like it. He skipped an episode. He skipped another. I mean, who knows? You know, will he be back next week? They say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Maybe he'll just stay in Vegas. I hope he doesn't. But, you know, it goes to show the level of dedication. But people might behind the scenes be thinking, oh, it's a 50-50 arrangement between Ryan and Dennis. It is not. It is an 80-20 at best. I mean, Dennis, when he bothers to show up, doesn't even read the questions before ahead of time. So, you know. Anyway, we're going to have a good time. Don't worry about that. And I want to thank everyone who's sent in their questions. We're going to get to them pretty much straight away here. But obviously, before we do that, we've got to pay the piper. Even though Dennis isn't here, we do have to pay the piper. A couple of exciting developments here. Two very, very exciting developments with Channel Fireball recently. Dennis emailed me sent me an email that had two items in it. And let's talk about the first one here. And then I want to talk to you about something else that obviously is... obviously, I'm very happy about it. Anyway, number one, premier card grading. Channel Fireball is getting into the business of slabbing bits of colourful cardboard, and with Premier Card Grading, go to premiercardgrading.com, right? You can get Magic, Pokemon, Flesh and Blood, Dragon Ball Super cards. You can get them graded, and they look really nice. I mean, you know, you get a card that is put in a slab of plastic that says how good it looks. That, I mean, it doesn't always end up looking as sort of aesthetic, you know, because it is just, it's now in one of them like safety cases like the DVDs are at Walmart or whatever. But these ones look really nice. And I mean, I don't know if I've got any cards that are expensive enough to get graded, but if you do, premiercardgrading.com, get across it with Channel Fireball, because I mean, what's the point of having nice, fancy, expensive cards if you can't rub it in people's faces about just how nice and expensive and fancy they are? You need a panel of qualified experts to tell you exactly how nice and fancy. You know what'd be funny, actually? What if I just sent them like a common? I wonder how much it is. I wonder if it's worth the joke to just send them like a copy of, I don't know, Thrag Tusk or something, right? Just because I really like the card Thrag Tusk. Spoiler for an upcoming question. I'll look into that. We'll see. That could be worth the gag. Well, anyway, premiercardgrading.com, that was number one. That was the first thing on Dennis's email. I want to talk to you about something else as well. I'm very excited to say that we are now no longer using coupon code SMAR. The decision has been made to roll them in together, and we're just going to use coupon code Knight from here on out. This is a decision that, you know, I can tell you now, the people on the podcast here today have really got behind 100%. I'd say 100%. Yes, 100% of the people on the podcast today I wouldn't call it a dialogue, but there has been a decision. You know, we've certainly, I say we, the podcast as an entity, as a unit, you know. Coupon code Knight, we are deciding to sunset coupon code SMAR. Thank you to everyone who has contributed to coupon code SMAR over the months, over the years. But as we say, coupon code Knight, that's where you head now to channelfireball.com. Make sure you whack in coupon code Knight at checkout, of course. Best way to support the podcast. I mean, that's it. You know, coupon code SMAR, it long, confusing, difficult to type. You know, which one do I use? Support the podcast, right? It's just hard. You know, a lot of hassle. So we're streamlining the process here. This is something that, once again, you know, there's a lot of excitement about this decision, a lot of very good feelings about it as well. So, coupon code Knight at checkout, channelfireball.com, premiercardgrading.com as well. Thank you to all the sponsors. Oh, and of course, the Patreon. I nearly forgot the Patreon members. Thank you to all the cheesebags, fresh and or otherwise, who are supporting the show. Patreon.com/ Scry me a river if you want to get involved. You could be listening to this episode ahead of time. There, by the time that you, a pleb who hasn't subscribed to Channel Fireball, oh, sorry, to Scry Me River's Patreon, by the time this hits your ear holes, other people, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of people around the world have already listened to it. You've embarrassed yourself. Go to patreon.com, Scry Me River. You don't want to be the last person to listen to this podcast. Absolutely not. You want to be on the bleeding edge of Scry Me River's output. Scry Me River. Get across it, patreon.com. Also, game nights, send in your suggestions. If Dennis can be bothered turning up next week, we'll try to make some kind of decision or get a poll going or something like that. Otherwise, I don't know, I'll just play Knights of the Old Republic or something that I like if there's nothing else, because that'll be good fun. Anyway, that's it. Let's get on with the questions. I just realized that like my little drinking breaks like that I take are usually when Dennis is talking, but I guess you're just going to get them wholesale now, so look forward to that. Also, I can't do I can't lean it away from the mic to cough or anything else like that, because, again, I usually do that while Dennis is talking, so. Oops. All right. Let's get into it. Once again, thank you to everyone who submitted. I tweeted out earlier this week. I was like, I'm doing a solo episode. It's going to be Ask Me Anything. People certainly did ask me anything, a lot of things. Most of the questions were fantastic. I think I'm getting across almost every single one of them. Except there are a couple of repeats from the last one, I'll touch upon them, but broadly speaking, great questions. Thank you very much, everyone. A lot of food questions, weirdly, which we'll come to last. Anyway, first one comes to us from Mushy Scanlan. Better be careful here, because obviously this bloke holds the purse strings. He says, wait a second, Dennis specifically asked for a 2.5-hour window free from work on Wednesday to record this question mark? Well, Mushy, I don't want to tell you, mate, but I would be checking down on the bloody blackjack tables and see what he's doing in this time that he said that he was going to be recording with me, because he's not doing that. 2.5 hour, 2.5 hour window as well. I'll tell you what, he's taking the P155. Doesn't take that long to record. Mushy, full internal investigation into this, into Dennis's malfeasance, I would have thought would be warranted. You know, he's let you down. He's let me down. Most importantly, he hasn't let himself down. He wouldn't give a toss about this. He'd be fuming that he got caught. Anyway, Dennis, hope the blackjack was worth it, because you're cooked, mate. Mushy, go get him. Anyway, next question, magic question, comes into us from David Riley, who asks, what are your favorite and least favorite cards in Magic? My favorite is Nozomi Grave Robber. That's the 2/1 rat that flips, right? The old Kamigawa thing. And my least favorite is the OG Purphoros. Now, that's interesting. I quite like Purphoros. I have a 4-color blink EDH deck. And obviously it does have, because I'm bravely unafraid of cliche, it has Avenger of Zendikar and Craterhoof Behemoth for the 1/2 punch to finish games. But if there's like, I don't know, Ensnaring Bridge or some other nonsense that means that I can't get in with combat damage, I have Purphoros. So when I blink stuff or play, you know, blink an Avenger of Zendikar or whatever else, it just does 10,000 damage to everyone. So that's a way to get in there for damage. So I'm sorry to hear that you don't like that card, David, because I'm quite a fan of it. Now, everyone knows, of course, I've already talked about this. My favorite card in Magic is obviously Farseek. It's just, I don't know, man. It's a card that was big around the time that I started playing Magic, back in 2012, 2013. It just does what I want in a Magic card, in that it is a green ramp spell that also, you know, you can go and fetch a Hallowed Fountain with a green ramp spell, and it's something that really speaks to me. I like the sorts of decks that play Farseek. So Farseek, and I guess if there was a runner-up, it would probably be Thragtusk, again, just because of the memories that I have associated with that card, and I still try very hard. I mean, Blink deck, right? And I still try very hard to make it work in Historic. It doesn't really work in Historic, but that's not the point. As for my least favorite cards, I'd never think about this one, because, like, it's very... My least favorite cards are very flavor of the month. You know, there's not, like, a card that I despise and completely hate. I mean, there probably is. I have to think about it. But, you know, the ones that came to mind were stuff like Muxus, right? Because grinding the Historic ladder for a while was just impossible because of that card. In the same kind of territory, Tybalt's Trickery. Tybalt's Trickery is probably actually very close to being my least favorite card, just because of how miserable it is or was to play against on the Arena ladder. I'm trying to think of a more well-rounded answer that sort of affects... I guess like card... Yeah, actually, here you go. Here's a category of card I don't like. Basically every Nicol Bolas card. Because if they're just in decks that like I always feel like I should beat but then always lose to. And like Grixis Mages, come on. I mean, we don't need to get into this, but yeah. Probably if I had to pick a type of card, it's probably just any card with a Planeswalker subtype Bolas. Because, I mean, they're cool and they're powerful, but they're just, ugh, man, they're so annoying. It's so tough to beat. Anyway, we got a good one here from Karel. This is not a magic related question, but I'm going to get across it anyway. Here we go. Question from Carell, who asks, what is your favorite quote and why? I had to think about this one because there are a couple. A former colleague of mine gave me the advice, worrying means you suffer twice, which is something that's always stayed with me. You know, if something's coming up, you're worrying about it, don't, because it just, if the bad thing that you're worrying about happens, it means that you've punished yourself before it happens and then after it happens as well. But that made me realize that, no, there's actually something, that was the first thing that came to mind, but I realized, no, that's sort of an extension or it's related to another quote that I try to keep with me and remember because it's very useful. Now, you'll know probably if you're a long-term listener, I'm not religious at all. Not even the slightest bit. We don't have to get into it, but yes, I don't sort of have much truck with religion, broadly speaking. But there was a theologian named Reinhold Niebuhr, right? And the quote that he came up with, coined or whatever, it's often the popular conception of it isn't exactly what he wrote. I actually did some research about this heading into the episode because I wanted to find out about it, but it's the Serenity Prayer. And it's often said as, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference, right? Now, Niebuhr actually coined it as like this. Father, give us courage to change what must be altered, serenity to accept what cannot be helped, and the insight to know the one from the other. So people have kind of adapted it a little bit. It has kind of changed in people's minds and the conception of it. But there is something about that that is very useful to hold on to those words. You know, having the serenity to accept that you can't change, the courage to change what you can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And it's the last one that's so important, you know, so you're not just pushing shit uphill or alternatively giving up on something that you can affect. So having the wisdom to know the difference between what you can and can't change and the serenity and the courage to deal with them respectively is... Yeah, I don't know. It's something that I hold on to. I guess I probably just should have said nothing ventured, nothing gained. Or is it nothing ventured, nothing lost? I can't remember the real one anymore, but that old episode will give you a giggle if you go and listen to that. Anyway, the Serenity Prayer, even though I'm not religious, I do like that a lot. Anyway, the next one comes to us from Lazy Tacos, who asks, my basement flooded because of rain today. Now, did you mean to call a DIY or a is this something that, you know, do you need to call workmen to your house to get this fixed, Lazy Tacos? Anyway, no. Lazy Tacos asks, my basement flooded because of rain today. What's the worst weather that you've been in, where and what happened? Now, funnily enough, it was also a flood and it wasn't a basement. I lived on the side of a hill growing up and people in Melbourne remember, 2004, I think it was, in December, there were massive floods, torrential rain. It was unbelievable. Like a meter of rain fell in an hour or something like that. It was just incredible. Anyway, I woke up in the middle of the night as the rain is absolutely pelting down, making a ton of noise, right? And I realized very quickly that my bedroom floor was flooded, right? There was like 15 centimeters of water in my bedroom. So I'm on my bed howling and hollering. I'm like, you know, 14 years old. Howling, hollering, yelling, screaming because, was it 2004? Maybe it was 2003 actually. I can't remember. Anyway, whenever it was, I was yelling and yelling to mum and dad, right? And because I was terrified, and I'll give you a good reason as to why. Anyway, I hear the splashing of water because the rest of the house is flooded as one of my parents, I think it was mum, came towards my door and I was like, no, mum, don't come in. No, I'm trapped, right? And she's like, what's wrong? Now, I loved video games then, love video games now. And there's one thing that video games taught me is it's that if there is like a power plug or an extension lead or a power pack or anything else like that in water, the entire body of water becomes electrified and very deadly. And of course, you know, I had like the, what are they called, the plugs where, like, the thing that you plug into the wall and then it's got like the power pack, right? It's got like one plug that you put in the wall and then it's got like four you can plug stuff into. I had a couple of them in my room, so I was convinced. I'm sitting in my bed yelling out because I'm convinced that if I get out of bed and step in the water, I'll be electrified and fried. I'll just die, right? Anyway, mum opens the door and walks in and I'm like, no, mum, don't come in. And she didn't really know what was going on. But obviously that isn't how electricity works. There weren't blue arcs of electricity, you know, across the water or anything else like that. And it was fine, but I was trapped in bed thinking that if I got out of bed, I'd be fried and I'd die of, you know, of electrical poisoning. Obviously, that didn't happen, thankfully. But our house was buggered. We had to rip up all the carpet. We had to, like, all the bottom of the furniture was all stuffed as well. We had to get the couches redone and had to throw out a whole lot of stuff as well. I mean, it was all covered by insurance and it wasn't a huge deal. But because we lived on the side of the hill, just a huge amount of water just basically flooded through our house and a lot of it stayed in our house as well. And I remember the next morning going up to the park, and the park was flooded, about a meter of water across, you know, all the football ovals and the cricket pitches and all that sort of stuff. It had turned into a giant lake, you know. So that was I wanted to go swimming across the cricket pitch, which would have been really fun. Anyway, that's probably the worst weather I've ever had. Luckily, nothing dangerous or life threatening or anything else like that, like a hurricane or you know, typhoon or something. But yeah, I thought that my life was in danger there because of what video games had taught me. Anyway. All right, our next question comes to us from Hobbsworth here. What's your favourite city that you've ever lived in and why? Boring answer, probably just Melbourne. And, I mean, I've lived in Toronto, which is good fun. I lived there briefly. I lived in Champaign-Urbana in Illinois, which was not. Lived in Berlin, which I did like, and Glasgow as well, which has been all right, I guess. Don't love it here in Glasgow. It is cold and miserable all the time. I liked Berlin well enough, but the winters are just so brutal. It's dark. I mean, Glasgow's not cold compared to Berlin. Berlin is freezing cold. But honestly, it's probably just Melbourne. I love Melbourne. I love Australia. Warm, sunny, you know. Melbourne's a lovely city as well. Very green. So I do want to move back to Australia. I don't know if I live in Melbourne again. I'm probably priced out of the property market there, but... yeah, Melbourne's a wonderful place. If you ever get the chance to visit once the world sort of opens up again properly, I highly advise you to head to Melbourne because it's a wonderful place. Anyway, next question comes to us from Corey Baumeister, who, of course, you'll recognize, one of my coverage colleagues, makes content for Star City, for the website whose name must not be said. Corey Baumeister asks, what is or was your favorite event to commentate and why? This is a question I answered, I think, in episode 18. If I had to nail it down, it would be GP Birmingham, Gary Campbell winning. What a show that was. Obviously, the first show I ever did, GP Melbourne 2014, was huge as well. Paddy Robson coming in second, massive show. My first ever. Looked like an absolute child going back and looking at the videos of that. But yeah, Gary Campbell winning GP Birmingham, probably an all-timer. Assuming this is magic. Otherwise, if it's obviously it's Red Bull 105. Doing the show in a castle, dressing up in medieval clothing, just incredible. The best show I've ever done, ever. Technically, I didn't commentate there, I suppose, but if we're doing magic shows, it's GP Birmingham. If we're doing all-timers, it is Red Bull 105 from Heidelberg, because that was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and I was so, so lucky to be a part of that. Incredible, incredible show. Corey also asks, who is your favorite person to commentate with, and why is it me? Ah, Corey, of course, mate. Of course it's you. Of course you know that. I don't know really why he asked that question, because obviously, yeah, my favorite person to commentate with, obviously, Corey Baumeister. Our next question comes to us from Juan Garcia, the Channel Fireball social media manager, who asks, what's the last lie you told? Juan, it's funny. So I did this podcast, right? It's like a sort of gaming magic advice podcast. I do it with my friend Dennis. But anyway, so one week he wasn't able to turn up for recording. So I did an AMA and I asked people to submit questions and because I could go through and just fill an episode without Dennis being here. Anyway, one of the questions was sent in by a coverage colleague of mine who asked who my favorite person to commentate with, and I just lied and said it was him. Just lied. Just said, yep, mate, it's you. You know, gave him the answer he wanted to hear because, yeah. The ego on this bloke, unbelievable. The self-absorption, toxic, really. I mean, everyone knows it. Anyway, in all seriousness, this is probably going to be a boring answer. I don't really know, Juan. I don't tend to lie a whole lot. I definitely don't like telling big lies. So probably the real answer is like probably just a white lie that I told for like social convenience or whatever. I don't know. I can tell you about the stupidest and the most pointless lie that I can remember telling, but it's when I was a kid. When I was a kid, there were like these like Star Wars token things that you collect out of chip packets. They weren't cards, but they were kind of like that. They're like little things you'd collect and trade, whatever else. And I was like, oh, they're all the kids. They had them at school and they were trading, playing with them, that sort of stuff. And I don't know. I think I must have been jealous. I don't know what. Like my parents never really fell for stuff like this, and they wouldn't buy us like packets of chips that often, so we could collect them. They, you know, not like 0% or whatever. We'd still, mum and dad still bought us treats and stuff, which was nice. But like, I don't know why I lied about it, but I just told everyone that I'd already collected all of them, and my parents weren't letting me bring the album that I had filled already into school, which was like such nonsense as well, because I'd collected other stuff like little Pokemon cards and all that sort of stuff. My parents didn't ban me from, like, I remember my parents banned me from taking in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire when it came out, because I think they knew that I would just read it under the desk all day and not pay attention. That was probably wise of them. But I just lied and was like, oh no, I've already collected all of them, and yeah, I'm not allowed to bring them to school. And people were like, oh wow, really? I'm like, yeah, you know, it's just, I did it pretty quick, I guess. I don't know. It's no big deal. But I just lied to like the rest of the kids at school and was like, I already had this full collection. Anyway, when one of them came over to my house and like, oh, can I see all the Star Wars cards you got? I was like, no. And I didn't have an answer why. I just lied. I don't know why. I'm very embarrassed even to this day. I guess I was just like jealous of everyone else's collections and wanted to be part of the conversation or whatever. But I just, it was the most pointless lie as well, because it obviously came out and then I looked like such a dill at school because people were just like, oh, Riley doesn't have any of them. I mean, I had a few, but whatever. But I definitely didn't have the whole collection like I said I did. So that was a very dumb lie that I told. I'm sure it's not the most recent lie I've told, because, you know, everyone lies all the time about all sorts of stuff for, you know, again, just social ease. But I don't know, Juan. I don't tend to lie very much about big things because it's a lot of hassle to remember which lie, what lie you've told whom. And eventually, I mean, I think that it all just comes out in the wash. And so, I don't know, generally speaking, it's better to tell the truth. Lama asks, what is more difficult, riding a horse or learning to play Age of Empires 2? Lama is someone who has obviously watched me struggling to learn how to play Age of Empires 2, a very difficult game. Whereas riding a horse, I've been told, I have a good authority, that it is not hard to ride a horse. So I would have to say, I think in fairness, learning to play Age of Empires 2 is more difficult than riding a horse, given that it is not hard to ride a horse, and Age of Empires 2, very complicated, very difficult game to play well. It's fun, but it's a fun that you really have to work for. You know, we can't all just sit back in the saddle, relax, take it easy. You know, some of us, we have to worry about APM, we have to worry about idle time, we have to worry about, you know, macro, micro, all the rest of it. So must be nice for all the people out there just cruising along on horseback, taking it easy, or, you know, sometimes not on horseback, just taking it easy. You know, a couple of weeks off here in hospital when you fall off, break your arm, all that sort of stuff. Ugh, life, absolute life, mate. That sounds wonderful. Anyway, I definitely say Age of Empires 2 is harder. Great question here from Lava Spike, who asks, if you didn't go into teaching or commentating, which career path would you end up in? I can't remember if I've ever talked about this on the podcast before, but this is going to be a weird one. Can I tell you this? It's going to be a weird one. I've always wanted to get into gardening. And it's always something that I thought I would do, like, when I'm older, you know. Because my grandma, my nan, she had a beautiful garden. She was always out there potting around the garden, you know, bloody doing, pulling the weeds out, repot. I don't know what you do in your garden, repotting stuff. I don't know, putting fertilizer on. I don't know what she was doing. Anyway, she had a beautiful garden. I love playing in it. And I've always thought, I'll get into gardening one day. And it's always been something, I'll just do it when I'm old. You know, it'll be my sort of, as I move towards retirement, that'll be the thing I'll really start to just get out of the garden and just enjoy building a little, a beautiful little atmosphere for myself out there. But I guess it's something that I've thought about as well. Like, if I, for some reason, I don't know how it would happen, but let's just imagine, like, I don't know, I can't keep doing content, and for some reason, like, my teaching credentials are lost in a house fire, and I can never prove that I've got the qualification to be a teacher, which I don't think would ever happen, because I could just go to the university and be like, can I have another copy of my degree, please? But let's say, for whatever reason, I can't be a teacher, can't be a content creator, can't do anything else. I think I'd like to be a gardener. I don't know why. It's difficult for me to justify this, other than I think it would be nice to be outdoors, sun on your back, you know, plant, making a space, like, you know, a garden that you have in, like, you know, public parks and that sort of stuff. I think I'd enjoy that. Work at a botanic gardens or even just like a landscaping company or something like that. I don't know. Maybe I don't, you know, I'm a very soft, wimpy boy who's never done a proper day's work in his life. I did work for a bricklaying company for very briefly in high school, but that wasn't a real sort of, that wasn't a career or anything for me. It was something that I just tried out, like work experience, and then never went back to it. But it was interesting to do. But I don't know if I'd actually have what it takes to to be a gardener. I don't know if I'd, I don't know if I could actually, you know, suck up the hard yakka that is involved in stuff like landscaping. So I'd like to think that I could, but I'm probably a lot weaker and a lot less tough than I think I am. So I like the idea of being a gardener. I like the idea of landscaping and that sort of thing. But I don't know if I could actually, you know, tough it out. But that's the answer. If I didn't get into teaching commentating, I think I'd like to be a gardener. I think that would be quite nice. Anyway, the next question here, Gibson Cat. Since Dennis is away touristing, if there were a theme park or a tourist attraction catered specifically to you, what would it look like? I have to say, I've never been one for theme parks. I think I've been to a few as like a youngster when I was a kid. I remember going to Movie World. I remember going to Movie World on the Gold Coast when I was a kid, and they had this like stunt performance, right? Where they had people jumping out of windows and like they smashed up a car and they set something on fire, and it was supposed to be so, like, it was basically just like special effects, but in real life, right? Like all these visual effects. And when I think back on what it must have been now as an adult, I'm like, geez, that would have been amazing. I remember this very distinctly. I was taken away from that demonstration in tears by my mum because I was so sad that they had smashed up a car and set fire to a building and a guy had jumped out of a window, you know, and broken glass and all that sort of stuff. And I remember sobbing. Mum going, what's going to happen to all the stuff they broke, Mum? They broke it. Can they fix it again? Because I was like 4 or 5 years old and I didn't understand that, you know, it was just special effects. I thought they'd come and smashed all this stuff up and I felt terrible for them. But no, I don't know. I've never really enjoyed theme parks hugely. As for a tourist attraction, I'll tell you, I mean, I think I've made it clear I love hiking, right? And one of my favorite places to visit on earth is Garmisch-Partenkirchen in Germany, in southern Bavaria on the border. Just a beautiful mountain town surrounded by three mountains, incredible walks through the alpine forests. There's rivers and gorges and lakes and mountains and forests and hills. It's wonderful. I think it's one of my favorite, if not my favorite place on earth, right? However, two things that always get me down whenever I visit Garmisch-Partenkirchen. There is no good food there. There's just nothing to eat that I'm going to enjoy, right? Because it's all German food and we all know what German food is like. And secondly, I like climbing mountains. I don't like walking down mountains so much because your knees puts a lot of strain on them. It gets buggered. You're tired. Like you spent all your energy getting to the top of the mountain. You sit there, you enjoy the view. Beautiful, right? But then the way back down is like, ugh, miserable because it hurts and you're tired and you just want to be back, right? So what I would like, right, what I would like is in terms of a tourist attraction or like somewhere to get away or go on holiday, is a place like Garmisch-Partenkirchen, beautiful mountains, forests, you know, lakes, rivers, all the rest of it, right? Beautiful place to walk, climb up mountains, beautiful view. But then I would like there to be a place at the top of those mountains where I can have my dinner or have my lunch or whatever time I get up there. And they sell burgers and chips and just like one of them all-you-can-eat buffets, basically, right? Just something, it's just something for everyone. Oh, beautiful. Just garbage, bottom of the barrel, lowest common denominator food. I'd love that. And then when you're finished, right, at the door, has anyone heard like the Magic Faraway Tree? So the Magic Faraway Tree, it's a story about kids who find this enchanted wood and they climb to the top of the tree. The biggest tree in the wood is called the Faraway Tree. And it's so big that its top branches go into the clouds. And there's a bloke who at the top of the tree, he lives there and his name is Moonface, right? And you'll be surprised to learn he's got the face of a moon. And he manages the slide that goes down the inside of the tree that's used for people to get out. So you climb to the top of the tree, but once you want to go down, you go to Moonfaces, you knock on the door, and he gives you a cushion, and you sit on the cushion on the slide, and you whiz around the inside of the tree, you get all the way down, then a squirrel collects the cushions and sends it back up to Moonface, right? If there were such a service at a mountain, if I could walk out of the place that I just had my beautiful dinner in and walk through a door, sit down on a cushion, and sit on a slide to go all the way down to the bottom of the mountain so I didn't have to wreck my knees walking back down, I tell you what, it would be magnificent. That would be the perfect holiday destination for me. A mountain town with an all-you-can-eat buffet restaurant at the top of the mountains and then a slide that would take you back down, you know, to the mountain town at the bottom of the mountain without having to wreck your knees walking all the way back down. So, Gibson Cat, that would be my ideal tourist attraction getaway type place. That actually sounds magnificent. I mean, seeing as we're just living in fantasy, let's put a tropical beach there as well, right? So I could decide whether I want to climb a mountain that day or go and hang out in the tropical beach in beautiful warm water like Queensland. I don't know, can you even get alpine mountains next to tropical beaches? Probably not, but hey, this is our fantasy land and that's what's going to happen. Beautiful. Excellent. All right, done. Also, the beach on the sand on the tropical beach isn't like sticky, doesn't like, it's beautiful soft sand that's like doesn't get everywhere, like, you know, Anakin Skywalker. Another question, your final one before we move on to the food section here. It's an interesting one from Chase Finley, who asks, you are creating the Australia plane in MTG. What is your low-hanging fruit for this set? All right. What do we need? We need... Do we have, like, cards that represent the cities? This is something I need to think about a lot. We could have vehicles. Holden Commodore. There's a vehicle card. Don't even worry about that. What else do we want? What are some iconic things we want from Australia? I guess the land cards could be used to represent, like, you know, beaches. We have beaches. That'd be lovely. Deserts. We'll bring back deserts. Obviously, there's low-hanging fruit. The Australia plane? Deserts. We're bringing back deserts. Back from Amonkhet once again. Deserts, beautiful. All right, we got that. We would need creatures with death touch. Maybe it's just a theme. Maybe it's the, you know how Ikoria had all the like keyword ability stuff that played around with that. We'll do that with the Australia plane, except everything's just, it's the death touch theme set. You know, like Ravnica is multicolor and Theros is enchantments. The Australia set is the death touch set. All the creatures have death touch or variants of death touch, that sort of thing. Yep. Good, good, good. All right. That's great. What else do we want? Could we have a surfboard as a vehicle? I guess we could. Yeah. That'd be fine. Food? Australia's not really known for its food, is it? No, we won't bring back food for Australia. Australia's not known for its food. What else do we want, though? We've got beach, we've got desert, we've got, I don't know, something rubbish about all the other cities that aren't, you know, Melbourne. Maybe, like, enchantments or something that come down, or artifacts come down with a downside, except Melbourne's the best one, obviously. That'd be good. What about people? Who do we want? When I think of famous Australians, I think of Stephen Bradbury. The one of the first Australians to ever win a medal at the Winter Olympics. Go and look up the video. So Stephen Bradbury won a gold medal in the speed skating. It's not a joke because everyone else either fell over or got disqualified. He had no right to win. He was not a very good... I mean, obviously Olympic level, but Olympic level Australian speed skater is very different to an Olympic level, I don't know, Norwegian speed skater. But he won the gold because everyone fell over in front of him and he, you know, limped across the line. So good on you. He's an absolute hero. Have him there. Creature with haste. Can take down creatures that are more powerful than him or something like that. What else do we want? Who else have we got? Famous Australians. Why can I not think of any other famous Australians other than like Auntie Donna, Hamish and Andy? I don't know. I don't want to just be like Kylie Minogue and Steve Irwin and Hugh Jackman because that's like, that's Australia for the rest of the world. I want to make like Australians, you know, I want like Bert Newton, right? Rest in peace. I want him in there. I want like, you know, what's his name? The hello, Frank Walker from National Tiles, that sort of stuff. I want like Benita from Play School. You know, the things that only Australians are going to know, right? Let's get, like, what's his name? The kid who had the sunglasses and did the famous street party. This is not interesting podcasting for anyone. What was his name? Corey? I think it was Corey. It wasn't Corey Baumeister. Corey, what was his name? His famous sunglasses. That was, oh, mate. Get the Wiggles in there, mate. Get the Wiggles. Like, I guess the Wiggles are world famous, aren't they? Anyway, I guess that would be what I'd be looking for. You know, people from, like... Eddie McGuire, oh no, not him actually. Daryl Summers, you know? Get Larry Emder on a magic card. That's who I want, you know? There we go. That's only going to be interesting for people who have an intimate knowledge of Australia, like growing up in Australia for the last, you know, 30 odd years, but those are my picks, all right? All right. We're going to move on now to a new topic. This topic is food. Got a lot of food-related questions here, which is interesting. I know that I have, I guess, unconventional food opinions, and I'm happy to. I mean, I'm happy to die on this hill. But thank you to the people who submitted food-related questions because we're gonna get real nasty here. Dr. Patrick Robertson, former housemate of mine, second runner-up at GP Melbourne 2014, and a good friend, and one of the only reasons you're listening to this podcast right now, actually, Patty. Paddy, a very important causal link in my magic career being what it was. Although I remember when I first sent the email off to Rich Hagen asking if he needed an extra commentator for coverage, Paddy gave me a 5% chance at even getting a reply. So that was the most important natural 20 in my life. Anyway, Paddy Robertson asks, is it true that if you had the option, you'd be comfortable with subsisting on a grey nutrient-rich paste rather than actual food? Patrick, I don't know why you're asking me this question. You know the answer. And the answer is, of course, yes, I would. I have talked extensively about how if, you know how in your house, for most people, there is a tap and you turn it on and water comes out. And hopefully, for most people, you're able to drink that water untreated. You know, you just drink it out of the tap and, you can drink Coke or you can drink, milk or other stuff if you want, but you don't have to. You can just drink water. There's no need to drink anything else. I wish there were the same with food. I wish there were a tap next to the water tap that was a food tap and you just turn it on and like the stuff that they eat in the Matrix, right, on the Nebuchadnezzar, that just came out and you could eat that and you never needed to eat anything else. I don't understand why we do this with water, but we don't do it with food. It doesn't make any sense to me. I do find eating to be tiresome and a chore sometimes because, I mean, I like nice food. I like eating nice food. Obviously, everyone does, but I'm hungry again. Whereas if I'm thirsty, I'm just like, yep, okay, water. Problem solved. Whereas with food, it's like, make the food, prepare it, cook it, eat it. Boring. Who's got the time? So yes, Patrick, I would subsist off a grey nutrient-rich paste if possible. And imagine, the other thing is, if you drink water all week and then on the weekend, you're like, a nice cold glass of ginger beer. Oh, it tastes even better. Whereas if you're drinking ginger beer every day, it's not as nice. Same thing. Eat your paste all week. You're going to have a delicious cheeseburger and chips on the weekend. Oh, it'll go down real nice. So I'm not ashamed of this opinion. I stand by it. And thank you, Paddy, for giving me the opportunity to soapbox about it. Little Sergeant Sandman 2 asks, soda or chocolate milk? Now, I assume when you say soda, you mean like soft drink, fizzy drink, like, Coke, Fanta, Sprite, whatever else, or chocolate milk. Very easy one here. Chocky milk. Love chocky milk. I tend not to get it too much because I think it was Sarah Silverman who taught me this. Make it a treat. I think, yeah, she wrote an autobiography. I think it was Sarah Silverman. I'm pretty sure it was. I'm like 90% sure. You know, her autobiography, she talked about how, she just smoked a ton of weed, so much weed. All day, every day, she was on the devil's lettuce, right? And one of her friends was like, you got to stop. And she's like, I do whatever I want. And the friend was like, no, you're going to ruin it, man. You've got to stop smoking so much weed just so when you do, it's a treat, right? And it will be nicer and be more special, right? And so she cut back, and it's true. If you do something all the time every day, what I was saying with, cheeseburgers, whatever else. You eat cheeseburgers all day every day. They just don't become as nice, right? So I love chalky milk, but I don't tend to get it. I get maybe once every couple of weeks as a little treat because it's, something nice, something special. And if I had it all the time, it would lose its luster. So definitely chocolate milk. Easy. Another one like this comes into us from Brett A. Maguire, who asks, cake or pie? Now, what's really funny about this question, Brett, and I'm assuming here that you're an American asking this question, because for me, and I think for, people in other parts of the English-speaking world, Britain, whatever else, this is not like an either or that we would ask, cake or pie, because a cake, obviously, almost always sweet, a confectionery, something, a dessert, something you eat, it's a sweet thing. Whereas a pie is savory. If you asked me without any other context, bring me a pie, I would bring you a pie with meat in it. A meat pie is the normal pie, right? For me, whether it's usually it's steak, you can have steak and kidney pie, delicious, chicken pie, fantastic. Boscastle pies in Australia, oh, so good, right? Because they've got chicken curry pies and all sorts of stuff. Macaroni pies over here in Scotland, very big. But they are, a pie is a savoury food for me. So when you say cake or pie, it's kind of like asking, donuts or pizza, which I guess is a thing you can do, but they're not, one isn't replacing the other. The answer is probably pie. By my standards, because I like savory food. I'm not a huge sweet tooth, but I don't mind it. But yeah, a pie, a beautiful meat pie, beef and gravy, very, very delicious. If we're talking about your pies, American pies, almost certainly cake, because pies like apple pie, blueberry pie, whatever else, fruits aren't meant to be cooked. Fruits, there is not a single fruit that is made better by cooking, and pies with fruit in them. I mean, cake with fruit in them. I guess the one exception I'll make is like blueberry muffins. I don't mind a blueberry muffin, but which is just a small blueberry cake. But like apple pie, bleh, no, absolutely not. What are you doing cooking apples, mate? Like pear as well? Bleh, no, don't cook fruit, man. Unless you're making jam, I suppose. I do like jam. Jam is cooked fruit, isn't it? Anyway, point is, don't cook fruit, all right? We weren't meant to cook fruit. It's not a cookable, it's not supposed to be cooked. It's like vegetables. Eat your carrots raw. What's wrong with you? So, pie, I guess, unless it's a sweet pie, in which case, cake. Tuppence Gallery has got some either-or questions for us as well. Coke or Pepsi? Largely irrelevant. I don't know. I don't care that I'm not saying they taste the same because they don't. If I had to pick, I guess Pepsi, just because it'll annoy Megan because she says Pepsi is disgusting when it's not different enough for Coke for people to not like the taste of it. She loves Coke, but she doesn't like Pepsi, which doesn't make any sense to me. So Pepsi just, I guess, vex her a little bit. Chips or pretzels? Pretzels are a waste of time, man. Pretzels are more air than they are pretzels. So chips, 100% chips. That's an easy one. Big, like a nice, like, fresh hot pretzel is fine, but I'd still rather a bag of chips, I think, than even a hot, like a hot pretzel, I think. Yeah, they're nice, but they're just, it's just like bread, you know. Nah, chips, I think. And then finally, Crim or Paola Vita Damita Rosa? Am I eating them, Tuppence Gallery? Am I eating Crim or Paola Vita Damita Rosa? I mean, I guess it depends on the context. Is this a sort of like, you know, burning building, I can only save one? As funny as it would be to, you know, vex Crim by leaving him in a burning building, I don't want him to die. Is this some, like, what am I doing with it? Like, am I teaming with him at a GP? Are they training me on how to play Magic? Is this a, you know, are we making content together? A difficult question to ask. In a vacuum, obviously I'll just say PV because I like to wind up Crim, but both of them have obviously wonderful individual merits. Paolo V. Damita Rosa, one of the greatest players of all time, Hall of Famer, wonderful bloke, worked with him as, you know, a coverage colleague, did coverage with him. He was one of my favourite, obviously not my favourite, my favourite Corey Baumeister, but one of my favourite people to work with. And as a player as well, enormous amount of respect for that bloke. Here's the great thing about Crim. Sorry again. Here's what I really like about Crim. I guess PV, whatever. Lancaster Mage says, what fried chicken gets your highest score on BDM's patented blocks past Popeye scale? Now, I don't know this scale. I'd have to ask BDM what it involves, but I imagine it's like, we're standing at a Popeyes. There's a fried chicken place X number of blocks down the road. How many blocks does it have to be before I'm like, no, we'll just go to Popeyes? I really like Popeyes. One of my favorite things about visiting America is eating fried chicken from places like Popeyes. Probably Bojangles outstrips Popeyes for me, I think. Yeah, I think I'd probably go to Bojangles before I go to Popeyes. But the best fried chicken I've ever had was in Charlottesville in Virginia. And it was Zaxby's, dude. And I don't think Zaxby's is a nationwide chain in the US. I don't know where it is or like what its deal is. I've never been able to find any other Zaxby's anywhere. But Zaxby's made the best fried chicken I've ever had in my entire life. And it's not close. It was so good. And there was so much of it. United States of America, you know how to eat. Over here in Glasgow, there's a place called Bucks Bar, which does fantastic fried chicken as well. But I mean, come on. It's Scottish. It's not American. If there's one country that knows how to fry a chook, it is the United States of America. So Zaxby's, I would say. Final food question comes to us here from David O'Reilly. Two questions for the price of one, David. Look at that. What is the nicest or most expensive meal that you've enjoyed and not felt bad about its cost? I don't expect to be any sort of two-star restaurant. Why not go somewhere with four or more stars anyway? A very good question, but I'm hoping it's something more yummy than fast food. Okay, I'm gonna have to see if this is actually still available so I can read you the what's on this. Yeah, okay, here it is. So there is a pub, right, in Fitzroy, in Australia, in Melbourne, right? And they have a signature dish which is just incredible. The pub is called the Napier Hotel, and they have their signature dish, the Bogan Burger. Now, the Bogan Burger is incredible. For those of you who don't know, Bogan is a word in Australia that roughly equates to redneck in the United States. Not quite redneck, but close enough, or chav in the UK, right? So someone who's a little rough around the edges, maybe not super well educated, you know, sort of, yeah, you understand what I mean by Bogan. And so the Bogan Burger, well, it actually isn't a burger, strictly speaking. It is actually, I guess you'd call it a steak sandwich because it doesn't have a burger patty in it, right? And I don't like steak. People know this, I don't like steak, but I will make an exception to the Bogan Burger, right? So Turkish bread roll, beautiful. Got a steak, lovely, right? And then as well as that, it's got cheese, beautiful. Bit of onion, lovely. We do love beetroot in our burgers in Australia, so there is beetroot on that. I don't mind a bit of beetroot in a burger. And then bacon and egg, love that, right? So far, sounding like a fantastic, a beautiful dish, right? You got your steak, bacon, egg, cheese, onion, beetroot, nothing too weird about that. There's also pineapple, and I know that's going to be a divisive one for many. Pineapple on savory food is not something that everyone is all about, but love a bit of pineapple on it as well. But then it starts to get really wild because I'll tell you that there's also a potato cake in the burger. A potato cake, for those of you who don't know, potato scallop for some parts of Australia. How to describe potato cake? Potato cake is a flat disc of potato that has been battered and fried. Look it up. You'll see. They're delicious. They're really, really good. You get them at fish and chip shops in Australia. So, steak, bacon, egg, cheese, onion, pineapple, beetroot, potato cake, and on top of that, a chicken schnitzel. And then on the side, some wedges and like a tiny bit of salad because they know you're not there to eat the salad. It's very expensive. It is very delicious. And it is not the sort of burger that you can pick up and eat with your hands. You do have to eat it with a knife and fork. It is just that much bloody food. And every time I've gone there, it is just, you leave with the most wonderful filled belly. So I would say, David, that is the nicest and most expensive meal that I've like enjoyed and not felt bad about the cost. I've gone in there, happily put down the $25 or whatever it is for the Bogan Burger. I wonder if they still sell it. I mean, I haven't been to the Napier for years. Napier Hotel, let's see if they're still going. Napierhotel.com.au. Let's jump over onto the menu here. Oh no, really? Do they not have it? Oh, the Napier Hotel, what's happened to you? Mains, vegan pan-fried pumpkin, chicken parmigiana, char-grilled kangaroo salad. A bit of kangaroo is very, very nice indeed. Oh dear, okay, now I'm looking through. Still there, the Bogan Burger. Steak, schnitzel, bacon, egg, potato cake, pineapple, beetroot, onion, tomato, cheese, wedges, and salad. $28? $28. Jeez, it has gone up. It has gone up. It used to be $15.50 back in the day. It used to be $15.50. $28. Holy moly. Oh, well, I guess that's inflation for you. Anyway, that's the answer. Bogan Burger. If you're ever in Melbourne, Napier Hotel, Bogan Burger, you will not walk away with an empty stomach. Guaranteed you that. Final questions here. Final questions. All of them to do with Dennis, interestingly enough. We did get some Dennis-related questions. Got a couple of them here. First one comes to us from Ben Tat, who asks, does Dennis talk that fast IRL, or does he modulate for the podcast? You talked before about your performance personality. Does Dennis have one as well? Dennis does talk that fast. I feel like I talk very fast as well, and I'm like that IRL as well as when I'm, making content. Does Dennis have he does talk that fast. Does he have a performance personality? To an extent. I would say to a lesser pronounced extent than me. There's quite a big difference between off and on, Riley, whereas Dennis, no. Broadly speaking, Dennis is like that IRL. Like, you know, he loves to tell a story, loves to have a lend of you, loves to, you know, play silly buggers and vex you, whatever else. Whereas I'm very quiet and sort of introverted a lot of the time when I'm not performing. The thing is, like, whenever Dennis and I are hanging out, though, we're having a good time and we're chatting and, you know, we're sort of a bit more on than we would usually be. I don't know what Dennis is like when he's by himself, because obviously he's by himself. But I would say probably the delta between me on and off is much larger than Dennis's on and off. But obviously he like, you know, puts it on a bit for the podcast because, I don't think he has a performance personality. I also don't think I have a performance personality. I'm not like, this is just, you know, imagine a sound mixer who's turning at the bass, turning down the treble, changing the faders, moving all that sort of stuff. That's what it is. It's not putting on a completely different mask. It's just turning up some things, turning down others. Because that's what you know, performance requires. That's why. And there are people like, oh, you just be yourself. Well, sure, you don't have much of an idea about what the entertainment industry involves if you think that's how it works. So, no, I would say that Dennis doesn't have hugely pronounced differences in the way that he behaves when he's off and on. So that would be my assessment. We could ask him that actually. Then follow that up with him next week, maybe if he returns. The next question comes to us from Hugo, who asks, "What is Dennis's most embarrassing secret?" And listen, if you've been with the podcast if you've listened all the way, this isn't really something I should share. Dennis has asked me not to tell anyone, but you know, I guess I don't know. I'm proud of him. I'm proud of him for this because of how he handles it and how he's moved on from it. But Dennis's most embarrassing secret is, and you mustn't tell anyone, he is or was, I suppose, a juggalo. Dennis was a fan of Insane Clown Posse with the face paint and the Faygo and all the rest of it. Like, to the point, you know, there are pictures of him with his face done in the black and white makeup and all that sort of stuff, you know, his subscription to Faygo of the Month Club, all that sort of stuff. Now, he doesn't like talking about this with good reason. Obviously, he doesn't want to be mocked relentlessly. And again, this comes from a place of great respect for Dennis because he has moved on from it. He has sort of, you know, we all had embarrassing phases when we were young. I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to make excuses for Dennis, but like, I think people should be given the chance to, you know, move on and demonstrate that they're not the people that they used to be. And so that's the reason that I know the community is going to be very respectful of this. I know that you would never dream of going on Twitter, going on Discord and just mocking Dennis relentlessly and, you know, finding the old photos of him in Juggalo makeup, or if you can't find them, making new ones in Photoshop. Obviously, no one's going to be doing that. I imagine people aren't going to be sending in pictures of him, you know, with his face photoshopped into, you know, with bottles of Faygo and all the rest of it. But, you know, look, it has had a lasting impact on him. I sat him down the other week because it was really frustrating me because he was insisting that we still don't have a scientific explanation of how magnets, of magnetism. He was like, no, like we still don't. It's one of the things that we just, as scientists, like science, like Dennis, we do know this. Like you need to understand, like that's not, it's not accurate. You know, what Violent J and Shaggy 2 Dope were saying about magnets being, you know, a miracle or whatever else. We do understand fundamental forces like magnetism. And he's like, no. That's not the case. Showed him some research. Still doesn't believe me. So, you know, again, I admire Dennis for coming to terms with his cultural past and all the rest of it. And you know, I don't judge him for it. Certainly not trying to mock him for this or anything else like that. But he was a juggalo for a good deal of his life and had a big part in it. But as I say, trying to move on from it. And I imagine the entire smart community will be very respectful of this. Not going to mock him for anything else like that. Kind of leans into our last, our final question here. It comes to us from John. Now, what's your favorite thing about Dennis that you'd never ever admit to him? I guess I just am really proud of him for coming to terms with this sort of, you know, cultural nadir that he had and the way that he deals with it. I do wish that he'd be a bit more, because, you know, he's going to deny it. This is what's going to happen here, is that, like, people are going to say, oh, you know, found out because Riley told him. I think it's time for him to just accept it, because he'll be like, no, it wasn't me. I didn't do it. Riley's making this up for entertainment point. Like, he's just trying to make some silly goofs on the podcast. He's just going to come out with all these denials. I can see it now. He's not actually going to admit to it. But, you know, one of my favorite things about Dennis is that he does, ultimately, he will face facts. He will admit the truth. He will, you know, he's a very reasonable, he's a very realistic man. And so, John, to answer your question, what's my favorite thing about him? I mean, maybe I'm cheating because I would admit this to him. I know that in his heart of hearts, he knows the truth. And I think that he may do himself a disservice by denying it, but I would admire him a lot if he just came forward and was just like, you know what, it is true, part of my life. You know, I was down to clown. You know, I did look up to Shaggy 2 Dope. I hope to be as dope as Shaggy was, although I don't know if he wanted to be as violent as Violent J. You know, I do admire Dennis a lot for coming to terms with some of the nadirs of his cultural past. Anyway, that's all she wrote today, sports fans. That is the AMA question for today. Thank you, AMA episode for today. Thank you to everyone who wrote in questions. Good on all of yous. I appreciate every single one of them that was sent in. And hopefully this was a good listen. We'll look at the numbers on the back end. We'll see if there is a dip in listeners when it's just me doing an episode. And if not, well, it's very clear who's bringing the heat when it comes to recording this podcast. Maybe Dennis isn't there. Actually, no, I don't want, oh no, I really don't want to do this by myself every week. Dennis, probably a very necessary part of this. Please come back to me, Dennis. You know, this community obviously still loves and supports you even after having found out your checkered past. But don't worry about it, man. We're here to support you. But thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. Quick Charizard, Me River, what did I play? I played Description, finished it. It was amazing. You should play it as well. It's really good. And apart from that, not much. Age of Empires, Magic the Gathering. That's it. Please send any questions. bit.ly/joinrunners.discord. You can do it on Twitter as well. There were some people who like asked advice questions in that, and we'll get to them. I was asking my AMA questions. I'll get to them next week, of course. Wasn't doing advice questions by myself. I need Dennis's wisdom to balance out my idiocy. So be good to have him back next week, I hope. But until then, take care of yourselves. Thank you very much to Channel Fireball. Make sure to go and have a look at Premier Card Grade at grading.com. Coupon code NIGHT at checkout. As again, the podcast, we are retiring the coupon code SMAR. So that'll be something that we can talk about next week as well. Just remind people of that. And thank you to Joachim Karud for the use of the theme song Shine. Go and listen to his music. It's all free. It's all fantastic. And you'll love it. That's it. We're done. Channel Fireball. Premier Card Grading. Joachim Karud. Stay fresh, cheese bags.